we hope today that you can take away some of how this history can be applied to both your personal program and how you work the principles and steps and traditions in relation to your family, your jobs, yourself, your community, and also how those also apply in OA and how we work with each other and how those of us who do service work with each other and work with our service bodies. So we hope this will be helpful. And Lisa is a much better historian than I am. I'll have to speak more towards personal experience. But Lisa will be our first speaker. So thank you, Lisa.
Thanks, I'm Lisa B. Compulsive Overeater from Johannesburg, South Africa. I'm so grateful to be here. Nervous and fast speaking. I'm going to do my best to speak slower because my brain says I've got so much to share and I don't have to share everything. So I just give thanks to you all here and some of whom I know and some of whom I'm meeting only now. Wonderful. And I give thanks to my higher power and to all the fellows who have supported my recovery and held my hands, both hands. I've been in the program. I'll slowly qualify. I joined in 2011 on January the 18th. On my knees, completely desperate, exhausted, yellow with an overload of my liver, having to process a lot of sludge that I was shoving in myself, and not believing that there could be something to help me. But lo and behold, I found OA. This is the miracle in my life. And I've released over 20 kilograms and I work the program. I have a sponsor. I sponsor as well. And I work my steps imperfectly. And so what happened is my sponsor, right from the get-go, she suggested to me, do service. And one of the things that I did was literature service at my home group. So I needed to do the inventory counting of the different books that the OA approved books. And I happened to come upon this book, AA Comes of Age. And I thought, what is this? And I wasn't sure because there were some non-AA, non-OA, there were some religious books as well in the cupboard. And I thought, what is this? And I had always heard approved literature. And then, of course, there is non-approved. And I checked and this book was on the approved list of OA literature. That was AA reading. And if I can just go to our invitation, I've got this beautiful wallet card, pocket reference for OA members. And in the invitation to you, it says, if you will read our literature and that of Alcoholics Anonymous with an open mind. There is somebody on this meeting here today who was at my face-to-face meeting this morning. And when that was read, I was thinking, hey, that connects to this talk today. I read this book with an open mind. I opened the book and started to read. One of the definitions was a force which is not human in origin. And what reading this book, I saw stories, characters, doctors, religious people, atheists and agnostics, each adding to this beautiful tapestry of the 12 steps and 12 traditions of Alcoholics Anonymous, what I have inherited and I am the beneficiary of. And I loved the way it was framed, that there were many, many a channel. So I want to just relate some of the stories that were, or excerpts, that I'm just going to move through some of them now. And because this is how I see the program, that there's been many channels that have brought me to, firstly, to the program, and secondly, to further my working and my recovery. There was a story of this Dr. Earl M., and that's on page 4 of the book. This is the AA Comes of Age. He was a notable in medical circles. And it says here that despite his medical knowledge, he had nevertheless been obliged humbly to learn his AA from a butcher. And it says here, thus he confirmed all that Dr. Harry Thibault had told us about the necessity of reducing the alcoholic's ballooning ego before entering AA and afterwards. Now, this speaking in the OA-approved literature and including in this book about my compulsive behaviors and also about my ballooning ego was so new to me. So what I had never spoken about my eating disorder, and I had never spoken about my ego unless it was very shamefully to my therapist. And what I wanted to share is that in the rooms of OA, I have learned to face and working in my recovery as well, I have learned to look at my ego without shame and with a sense of humor, and knowing that I'm not alone in having an ego. And this has been magnificent for me, part of my being free. So I'm going to just go down. There was a beautiful story on page 18 about a woman named Marty, and she went to a meeting, and when she came back to the sanatorium where she was staying, she said to a fellow patient whose name was Granny, "Granny, we aren't alone anymore." And I actually want to cry whenever I read that. It's just really, I'm not alone anymore. Yeah. So then I'm just going to pull things from different pages. There was mention, this is Bill W. in chapter 1. Chapter 1 of this book is from page 1 to page like 48. And he's speaking himself, talking about these various fellows. He talks about them being the early travelers of AA. And he says, the candles were being lighted in all places, obviously metaphorically. And this was beautiful. I think of the candles in South Africa that are being lit all the time. And there is something about the reference in the book to communication, outside communication, articles in daily, American media, but obviously it was probably such old media that it's not in existence anymore. But there was a lot of speaking about getting the message out carefully, effectively, and how it brought in those days of 1951, when I think one big article went out, the Saturday Evening Post. In fact, I checked 82 years and 4 days ago, that article went out. And I actually found the article in an archive this morning. And it made a huge difference. An explosion of AA that brought about sponsorship, the need for sponsoring person to person, and so on. Here, I just want to go to page 22. It says here the Cleveland pioneers had proved three essential things: the value of personal sponsorship, the worth of the AA book in indoctrinating newcomers, and finally, the tremendous fact that AA, when the word really got out, could now soundly grow to great size. I thought that was beautiful. There was a story about this Alaskan group that took shape because a mining prospector out in the wilds one night while they were drinking found an AA book, someone's smiling here, in an old oil drum. I just love that story that they, and I wonder how many stories like this were found, brought people to recovery. I know for me, I asked somebody who I know goes to OAA, and I said to her, tell me about the program. And she opened the boot of her car, and in the boot was a basket, and in the basket were books. And pamphlets, and she handed me a book and the welcome pack at the time. Today it's the Where Do I Start pamphlet, but in those days, in 2011, it was the 6 pamphlets, Plan of Eating, Dignity of Choice, etc. And that was my oil drum story. Bill talks about at the convention of 1955, when AA was no longer being run by the founders and it was handed to the conference, he creates a composite character called Mr. Grassroots. And he bases this character on a lot of people that he spoke to during the convention. And I want to read something because for me, I find it exquisite. On page 42, there's an excerpt. It says here, these people were not strangers to me at all. It seems as if I had known and trusted and loved them all my life. I had felt that way about my AA group at home. But now I felt the same way about every AA and all of AA. I can't tell you what this meant. To me, it was big. This was real brotherhood. These were my people, my kin, and my kind. I belonged to them, and they belonged to me. Every barrier dropped out of my mind. This tremendous thing happened to me in only a few hours. Page 140. There was a beautiful read because in chapter two of this beautiful book, there are three sections. Each section deals with one of the AA legacies which apply to us. The legacy one is the recovery. Legacy 2 is the unity, and that section has got all the traditions. It's just fantastic. And Legacy 3 is service. And I was getting more and more excited sitting here before the meeting because there's so much here. I want to read something about money, 140, because it applies a lot to me, 140. A Bill W. sponsor, Ebi. This is at the bottom of 140. Let's begin with my own sponsor, Ebi. When Ebi heard how serious my drinking was, he resolved to visit me. He was in New York. I was in Brooklyn. His resolve was not enough. He had to take action and spend money. He called me on the phone and then got into the subway. Total cost, 10 cents. At the level of the telephone booth and subway turnstile, spirituality and money began to mix. One without the other would have amounted to nothing at all. Right then and there, Ebi established the principle that AA in action calls for the sacrifice of much time and a little money. And I loved that when I found it. There is a lot about group conscience here and group conscience stories and arguments and disputes and them all being key to the creation of the 12 traditions. And what I found interesting was about spirituality and religion. It says here on page 162, there was no such thing as group opinion in the area of religion and spirituality. And there never could be. I thought that was fascinating, that there is that total freedom in the realm of spirituality. And what was also huge was the story of how God, as we understood him, came about and a power greater than ourselves. There was huge arguments that are shared in AA Comes of Age between the agnostics and atheists and the religious. And what he says is almost poetry, Bill, because he says here, and I want to quickly find it, it opens the gateway for other people to come in, for everyone to come in, this huge dispute and the outcome. It's burst open this door for everyone, and that is so magnificent. At the end of this book are appendices, and I love these as well. Dr. Silkworth is in Appendix E, Sub A, and Harry Thibault, and it's just a book that I like to. I love to look at. I find it quirky, and I find it. It talks to me. It's like the language of the heart, from the hearts of these people, and the snapshots of people's lives. You know, just a moment, like somebody who was step 9 and he had lost his money and he went delivering in his dry cleaning Tranta old vehicle and to the back door of his fellows, his friends who he used to socialize with, his high socialite friends. And here he was working his program and being humble. And, the imagery is just beautiful. And it talks to me to say, I can do these things too. I can take action too. I'm one little fragment in this huge 12-step program, and people on this planet today in this beautiful, all the countries of the world that are working this, that have fellows. I'm part of that, and I'm not alone anymore. And with that, I'll pass. Thank you.
Thank you so much for that. I'm going to be the second speaker. Hi, everyone. Claire, the grateful compulsive overeater. I want to share that when I read both of these books for the first time, it was so very helpful to me, because it's when I was studying how to apply these traditions in my life, right? And both of these books address in some of how those traditions, or very much how those traditions evolved for our fellowship out of the experience of those who came before us. And I think that experience is very applicable. And so personally for me, in rereading some of this, and I've done that before, at the time when I was looking to applying those spiritual principles, the things that stuck out to me about Dr. Bob, and it, for those who have not read the book, much of it is told by those who knew Dr. Bob and who had knew him growing up, knew him while he was a drunk, knew him as AA grew. And I would say in my recovery, the things that stuck out to me about all of this were, first of all, the sheer amount of service that he did. There was a nun that he worked with, and they carried the message to like 5,000 people in treatment. I mean, can you imagine? They moved things forward, and he enabled so many others. And so when we sponsor, as an act of service, it's certainly in our tools and in our steps, but essentially when we sponsor that one person who's in recovery, then goes on and sponsors another. And it really crystallized to me that if we do that, and we are conscious as our, you know, as our OA 12 and 12 says, you know, we are not, you know, those of us who carry the message aren't simply, you know, we don't just carry the message, we are the message, right? That is one of the things that stuck out to me about Dr. Bob in both his approach to sponsoring people, his approach to treating people, although that, you know, is separate from sponsoring, and also in his approach to his 4 through 9, you know, particularly his 9th step. I left home at a young age, and so I did a lot of damage. You know, I came from a background of abuse, so I was like any I was like any kid that would come from that background, right? And I left home at 16. And so when I got to my 9th step, I just felt, wow. And that example of a doctor who was a drunk going and knocking on patients' doors and making amends. Wow. Can you imagine? I've learned so much from that about humility. And carry that with me. And I think when I focus on the story, and I'm going to quote here, that said, neither Dr. Bob nor Bill ever wanted to be regarded as anything other than what they actually were, fellow alcoholics, fellow human beings. And they talked about the view of others in the same chapter, where they had looked at the old co-founders had fallen somewhat short of veneration, ranging from love and gratitude amongst most members to an occasional antagonism and suspicion among a few. The freedom of opinion is entirely appropriate for a fellowship founded upon equality. One drunk talking to never down to another. I learned a lot about that in my applying that in my life, but also in my service. And I have admittedly done that in my service. I have done it at every level of my service. I looked at someone and said, why are they doing that? I'm suspicious of that. I do they have a motivation other than the best interests of OA? Are they doing this because they want control? Are they doing this because, wow, that power of example, to be accepting of the fact that we are all human, so we could go there, right? But that our fellowship is based on patience, tolerance, love, and kindness. And that is something that I took from this, that we need to learn that, or I need to learn that. I can't talk for the we, I can talk for me. I need to learn that in giving my service. And I will admittedly tell you, there are times that I have those kind of suspicions. And I have to pause. And these both of these books help me understand that our traditions were very often the result of conflict, or the result of actions that were taken that may have been harmful. People didn't necessarily mean them. They didn't mean them to be harmful, but they could have been. And I take a lot from that power of example in both of these books about learning to accept. Because the problem here is not anyone else. The problem is me. It's because I have expectations, or I think they should be being done the way I think they should be. A lot of I there, right? Get that? And from this, I really learned, and I do it very imperfectly. I'm going to be the first to admit it to you. That my eye has to be parked at the door. It's a we program. And that my expectations of what, and my assumptions of what other people's motivations are just that, you know? And where do expectations take us? They're resentments in the making. And so I constantly go back to these books to remind myself that, and we do have conflicts in OA, in our meetings, with our sponsees, we have conflicts in our life. And I do have to go back to these to remind myself that this is where, and that there are people that may think of me that way in doing service. I know there are. They've said it to me. In many different ways, trust me. I need to go back to these stories of the origins of our traditions and remind myself that it's okay for people to have these different opinions about things, because we are democratic in nature. That's what we are. And that it's okay for people to have different beliefs, because, and I will say in the virtual region, it's so important because we are global. We reach many different cultures. We have many different focused intergroups. And we are not all going to think alike. It's just not going to happen. And in OA as a whole, we're not all going to think alike. But I have been privileged to attend some very lengthy assemblies that ended up reaching 100% unanimity at the end of the votes. Can you imagine? I think that's a miracle. I don't think that's something that happens anyplace else. Did we all agree with every point? Absolutely not. But we had voice and we were heard and we knew we all loved each other at the end of the day. Our trustees find us saying that we might not like each other, but we love each other. And I like that, right? Like I might not like everyone, but I love everyone. I know there's very few people I don't like anyway, but that's me. If I really suggest going back and looking at those foundations, again, when I first started, I applied them just to my life and how could I, practice these principles in my work and in my family. But applying them in service, for me is a lesson I'm still learning. And, I take that from Dr. Bob, and I wanted to get to one other quote. And there is talk in here about, you know, group concerns and angry rumors and, you know, that kind of thing. There is talk about, the different deals that were done and the learning of, you know, what kind of outreach could be done and not done. And I've been privileged to do a lot of outreach in OA. And that's something that's always evolving. And we're now in a world of social media and things that aren't even considered, you know. Putting up a flyer was great, but is it okay to put up, and we had to pay to print the flyer because we're self-supporting, right? Is it okay to do a social media ad? And we've come down to the position that it is. We're carrying the message. It's the same as if we had put a flyer up on the church wall. This is how we can reach people now. There's an entire generation of people that are not looking at flyers or leaflets or things like that, that are doing things digitally. And we, in group conscience in the virtual region, hope that as we evolve, we learn new ways of doing that. And we make a ton of mistakes on the way there. And we correct them as soon as possible. But the thing I also took away from this is not having the fear of when doing service, of making those mistakes. Because, and I really did take that away from this. I chaired our first convention in virtual, which happened to be in the height of the lockdown. So it was huge. And we made a ton of mistakes and I love every one of them. And we've made mistakes this time around too, because we changed some things up. But the things that we have done are just awesome, you know? And a big part of reading both of these books for me, and I can just speak to my, you know, what I took from them is that I really learned that it's okay to go out there and do, right? Like it's okay. We do 100% try to honor the traditions. And we, like, for example, in the virtual region, you know, have compliance things for Europe and all sorts of things that are, you know, difficult to put into place. But at the end of the day, I've learned to put aside my fears. And the other thing I learned, which I'm just going to end with a lot from Dr. Bob's story, and I don't do this often enough, is, and this is different for everyone because we do, like, spirituality is a very personal thing. So I think that sometimes prevents me from doing it. But is praying with my fellows. Like, and, you know, Dr. Bob talks about taking the knee. And that's different for everyone. There are faiths in this world where you can't take a knee. There are people that have no faith in this fellowship, and but yet have their own internal higher power. And there's still a way to, you know, spiritually invite the sunlight of the spirit into everyone in the way that they believe it's there, right? And that's something that it's a work in progress for me. I'm going to stop there. Thanks, everyone, for being here.